You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. There we go. And hello, everybody. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. And that other fellow on the screen is a gentleman named Andrew Tarvin. And and we're going to talk about funny. No, we're going to talk about humor at work, which is it's interesting. It is a whole lot more controversial than I would ever have imagined since last we chatted. In fact, just this morning, I came from a board meeting just now. And just prior to the board meeting, I got an email from the ED. I'm the chair of the board. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me. But I'm the chair of the board, and I got an email from the executive director. We were adding a couple of board members, and he said, this is a good opportunity to try and move the culture of the board and move it in a direction that is more serious and less humorous, less jokey, less. And I responded appropriately and said, you know, ironically, I'm having a conversation as soon as our board meeting is over with a gentleman who has a business called Humor at Work. Mm-hmm. And his goal is to infuse the work environment with more humor because apparently it works. Andrew Tarvin, thank you. Thank you for being willing to spend your time. You were a techie guy, and now you're talking about humor. So how did you get from that to this?
Yeah, it's not a natural segue. Hold on. I'm hearing an echo from myself.
From yourself. Well, is it in your...
speaking in through your microphone.
So, technical issues already. Mm-hmm. So you were saying, you were speaking about...
Let me jump in as you're talking about this this comment from the executive director. I don't know. It seems strange to me because I know very few people that are like, you know what? I need more seriousness in my life. You know, I would like to laugh less. Very few people say that. And so I find it interesting the executive director had this as a directive, because there's a tremendous amount of research at both the individual and the organizational level that talks about the benefit of humor in a more positive workplace culture and all of those things, which is all stuff that we can get into. But perhaps it's helpful for people to understand like why I'm passionate about this as a subject matter, which I'll address in just a moment. The last thing that I do want to address is that we both have wonderful, kind of abstract art backgrounds.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, which was, I like it.
But quite by design.
Exactly. It's intentional. And so that's what was recommended to me was abstract art background. And so I found a very local artist to produce this, so local that she lives with me and was born 3.5 years ago. So this was from all of this artwork was done by my daughter, just mirroring paint.
Oh,
all
okay.
Over the
now
place.
You have to move your head out of the way because now I want to see. Oh, that's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
And this one over here, the green and red. My wife did help. It's in the colors of my company. So the brand is kind of there, and you can kind of see it a little bit to the side is her handprint. But even that I think is a simple example, and we can talk for sure more about it. Is, you know, there's a mindset of humor that I bring is like, if I have to do something anyway, I need a background. why not have a little bit of fun or play with it a little bit? And so if I need a background, why not have the artwork of my daughter? Because now every time I look at it, it makes me smile. And so that's the mentality that I try to go forward with. How do we add a little bit more sense of play or
that's
fun?
That's actually, that's one of the things, and maybe we will talk about this, or maybe that was it. But humor, you know, people, there's a big range, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I can't see where my hands are on the screen, but they're out there.
It goes from here to here and even before, yeah.
And so humor, you know, there's stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, I'm telling jokes, and there's bringing a little chuckle, and there's good cheer.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, and all of that could count as humor. And I suppose, the piece that probably seems weird to some people, it's not that they don't want more chuckles, laughter, mm-hmm. humor in their lives. It's that maybe it's because of the past, right? It's there's work. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other thing. And when we go to this place called work, this is, you know, this is where we need to be and not over there, because it's about getting stuff done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not about making people feel good. It's not about me feeling good. It's about getting stuff done. And I know you have a lot to say about that. Those things are not actually out there. They really, in fact, are here or
for sure
be.
So. Yeah, and that is absolutely, I mean, it's actually absolutely pushback that I've gotten in the past. It tends to be from older generations that have a different mentality of work. And when I was first starting some of this work and talking about it, I had someone kind of pull me aside, and I was like, you know, work is supposed to feel like work. You know, if it was meant to be fun, it'd be called play.
That's why they call it a job.
Exactly. Right. That's why it's a job. And I'm, you know, it's go to it and do all this. And it's like I guess I understand where that mentality came from. Because if you think about the Industrial Revolution, you know, for us to go back and think about productivity in terms and how we, you know, used to measure productivity and things like that, then it purely was about how do you make the most widgets. From a factory standpoint, how do you make the most widgets and produce the most kind of thing? In which case, a sense of humor didn't necessarily matter as much, because you're not going to necessarily use that on a machine line. What I find interesting, though, is there's studies even relating back all the way back to the early 1900s of using humor. Like, they used to have in factory floors during the First World War, they would have people who would read the newspaper or read humorous things in the middle of the factory floor to keep people engaged and keep their mind going while they're doing some of these like very repetitive tasks in factory. So to say that, to pretend like it didn't even exist before is wrong. But as work has evolved, as we've gone more and more to a knowledge economy and where our emotions dramatically impact our ability to get things done, humor is becoming increasingly more important. And so if, as an executive director or as a manager or whatever, your goal is to have an effective workplace, to have people who are engaged in their work, not disengaged, you want to have people that actually want to show up to their work as opposed to dread it completely. If you want to have people that are willing to do tasks for longer and have less burnout, not have to take as many sick days and on and on and on, all these benefits, then humor is actually a very strategic thing to welcome into the workplace. Yeah. Done in an effective way. Now, that's obviously a key point to it. And something that you're alluding to is that, you know, humor runs the gamut of stand-up comedy to mirth, to levity, to positivity, to general lightness, etc. And so there's a very intentional reason why I speak on humor in the workplace and not comedy in the workplace, because comedy is just one form of humor where the intention is I want to make you laugh with like a joke or an anecdote or a story. Which is incredibly valid and very useful if we're good at that, if we can do that. But there's also a whole broader range of humor where the goal is not to turn you into a stand-up comedian, but rather for you to add humor into your professional tool belt to use at the right moment, at the right time, with the right people to serve the right goal. Right. I'm not saying use it all the time and become a class clown, but rather know that it's an effective skill to achieve certain things.
Well, and it's also, there's the there's another potential rub, is right. Just like it's stand-up comedy, one person thinks that's the most hysterical thing they ever heard, and somebody else is like, that's inappropriate, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so it always lands, human beings mm-hmm. tend to be individuals, and it lands differently for different people. And I suspect that's true across that continuum. And the other thing I think that's changed from, when it's thinking about work as just producing widgets, you know, people have a much wider view of how you determine whether an enterprise is successful, right? I mean, mm-hmm. do people show up at all the time? Do people call in sick? Do they stay? Do they look for other jobs, right? I mean, what's the enterprise is more than just what's the count and how long did it take to make those, right? Mm-hmm. Because maybe on a particular day, without any humor, you can really crank out a bunch of widgets, but no one's showing up tomorrow because I think people have gotten smarter about that, about thinking about what the long view.
Exactly.
How do we make that?
And it's a huge aspect of why I'm passionate about humor, because, you know, my background is in computer science and engineering and spent 6 years as a project manager at Procter & Gamble in the IT space. And just my mindset has always been about efficiency, obsessed with efficiency, to the point that I joke that I was born even 3 weeks early. So like even in the womb, I was like, how do I do this faster? Let's get through this quicker. I'm ready to go, right? What I learned at P&G is that there's a difference between being efficient and being effective, right? And Peter Drucker talks about this as well, management guru. He says that efficiency is doing things right, so doing things as quick as possible, whereas effectiveness is doing the right things. And so exactly to your point is that you could have the most efficient factory production kind of day, or even the most efficient, sending of emails, et cetera, but that's not long-term effective if you have to replace your employees every 3 months, because we know the dramatic cost of turnover. And so, yes, if you're staffing, fry cooks at McDonald's, then yeah, the turnaround time and the training time and the onboarding time for someone is a little bit certainly lower. There's still a cost to all of that. It's still more effective long run to have the same person doing it as opposed to need to train new people. But if you have a bigger role, if you have something that takes a lot more time to get understood, to find the right candidates, all that kind of stuff, that's why they estimate that the cost to replace an employee is anywhere between 20% to 120% of that person's salary to replace them. So if you have someone that's, making $100,000 a year and hopefully producing more value than that $100,000 a year, if they leave now because they are disengaged or because they're not enjoying work or because they hate showing up and they're dreading Monday, et cetera, then that's a significant cost every single time you have to replace that person. And so this is where I geek out about the numbers, the engineer side of me. Like, we've done the ROI of humor in the sense of, like, as you start to break down some of these numbers, what does humor help to solve? And it's a pretty big number that, all comes from being a little bit more human in the workplace and having a little bit more levity and recognizing that you're employing humans and not robots.
Right. Well, okay, the question about that. So I'm wondering if over that time, there's hey, in this study or in this look, humor produces more job satisfaction or, mm-hmm. Whatever it is. Have there been any studies that sort of that or research that, hey, we did this thing and we implemented these things into our mm-hmm. place and we actually got more productivity, we made more money, whatever the measures are that the people with grayer hair who don't see work and humor going together but would be convincing, oh wait, this actually leads to mm-hmm. better results, have there
Absolutely.
Been any of that?
Yeah, there's a whole range of things that we, that we can share. So a lot of times we share the 30 plus benefits of using humor in the workplace backed by research, case studies, and real world examples. And so there's a whole range of things that it can do. So for example, it can reduce stress and prevents burnout. There's studies showing it at a physiological level, what that does. Right. So when we laugh, we actually increase blood flow through the body. We relax our muscles. We boost our immune system, et cetera. So that talks about like the physiological effects and how it counteracts things like chronic stress. It improves productivity. And studies they've shown multiple times that either showing it improves productivity or also research saying that it would. Like, and the one that I have pulled up kind of in front of me because I wanted to share some of these. Study of more than 2,500 employees, 81% said a fun work environment would make them more productive. You have, it also helps executives. In another study that was published in the Harvard Business Review, it showed that managers who used humor were paid more, and it was positively correlated with the more humor that they used, the more that they were paid, kind of in that context. So there's definitely, you know, relationships there, and also at an organizational level. Right. So it's shown that in some studies are like, oh, that organizations that use humor are more profitable because they have a better workplace environment, because they are, you know, a fun place to work, because our people are willing to, you know, actually show up to those places.
Because they don't have to look for new employees and onboard.
Exactly. Because
employees.
They don't have the turnover, right. Because they don't have all these components. And so for sure, there's a lot of research around it. And I'm happy to, if people are like, I need the stuff. It's like, it's been in Harvard Business Review. There was just an article published about the value of improvisation in the New York Times. Like you name a publication. I've been quoted in the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, other place where they're like talking about these benefits of humor. So you can look, if you need that research, I can share with you.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
At the same time, on the flip side of things, one of the other ways that I frame it is through a very simple, very important, very dumb question. And the very simple, very important, very dumb question that I would love for you to answer is, would you rather do something that is fun or not fun?
Are you asking me that
question? Yeah, I'm asking you. Would you rather do something fun or not fun?
Are they two different things, or am I aimed at one goal? I'm going to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, but you know, is it about producing widgets? I would rather it be fun producing widgets than not right. fun producing widgets.
In yeah. general, right? Yeah. As long as it's not a distraction, or as long as it's not illegal, or as long as it doesn't cost me too much money, I'm going to choose the fun thing. Well, it turns out that at least every single human that I have talked to has said the same thing. And I would guess probably 99.9% of humans would say the same thing. And so then
they would just be having fun.
Exactly, right? They themselves would be having fun with the question. Yeah. And so then it stands to reason that if you were to say, make your emails just a little bit more fun, would people be more likely to read them? And yes, there is research showing that humor can increase click-through rates. If you were to make your meetings a little bit more fun, would people be more likely to pay attention? So yes, there is research that shows that using a little bit of humor actually changes what people are paying attention to and boosts their mood as part of a presentation. If you were to make your own work a little bit more fun, would you enjoy it more? And there is research that shows, yes, it does have a positive correlation with things like workplace satisfaction, with productivity, with things like, especially, I mean, we're talking about widgets a lot, not necessarily even the knowledge economy of meetings and things. Yeah, yeah. There's studies that show that humor helps you and will, if you make a task fun, you're willing to do it for much longer periods of time without it becoming a distraction, without you doing it any worse because of the way that, depending on the way that you gamify it. And so basically, the research is all there in terms of humor can be effective. Now, a key component of that is that it is effective humor. Not all humor is created equal. Humor can certainly distract people. It can offend people. It can make people feel actually unwelcome. It can, you know, almost be too fun in some senses that people are then, you know, not focused at the task at hand, et cetera. So there is a limit to all these things, but the broader goal is that, yes, humor is a powerful tool that we should be learning to employ effectively as opposed to trying to pretend like it doesn't exist or ban it completely.
Okay, so go there. Hey, somebody sees this conversation as that sounds, yeah, God, you know, our mm-hmm. workplace is really dreary. We sure could use, I'm in. Like, mm-hmm. everybody can do this? Well, like some people are more cheer inclined than others. Mm-hmm. Some people are better at that. Some people, right? So can everybody successful? You know what I mean? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there, and whatever you do, don't try to be fun. Are there any of those people? Just do us all a favor. Keep that to yourself.
Yes. Yeah, you're doing a disservice to the movement if you yourself try to be funny, right? You're taking us back. No. So what we believe at Humor That Works is that anyone can learn to be funnier, right? Whatever your baseline is, we can certainly improve that, and we can help you to learn how to effectively use humor, because not every type of humor is exactly the same. Right. Like even I first kind of like really came to like understand this more with my brother, because I am not a naturally funny person. Right. Even though I talk about humor, even though I do stand up and improv comedy, and I have a dry bar comedy special, and I have a TEDx talk on the skill of humor with more than 15 million views. And even though I've done shows in all 50 US states and all, like whatever my credentials are as a comedian, I am not quote unquote naturally funny. And I know that because I went to my high school reunion and told people that I did comedy, and they're like, but you're not funny.
They said, you?
You? You of all, are you sure? Yeah. Are you? No, right? And if you read the comments on my YouTube, on my TEDx talk, there's still people that believe that I'm not funny. Now, there's great. There's more people that believe that I am funny, but there's plenty of people that believe that I'm not. But that in juxtaposition with my brother, who is just 2.5 years older than me, same parents, same kind of two getting together, et cetera, same generally same upbringing, et cetera. He's a naturally funny person. He is the type of person that, you know, people are kind of just sitting there listening to. It doesn't matter what he's talking about. People are engaged. He's always been naturally more extroverted, more, he's one of those people that like will make people laugh, and then you'd be like, how did you do that? Or why did you say that? Or what were, and he's like, oh, I have no idea.
Is this the point at which you bring him onto the screen?
Exactly. Like I got to bring him in and be like, here, watch him go. But he, because of that, because of the work that I do, he's a professor at Texas A&M where he teaches courses like leadership and conflict resolution and intercultural communication. Because of some of the work that I was doing, he wanted to study it as well. So now he talks a little bit about the humor. He talks about the rhetoric of humor, how humor works in persuasion. And we were presenting at a conference together, and a woman came up to us afterwards and she's like, I don't believe you two are brothers. And we're like, well, good. Like, we do look somewhat different. Like, people tell me I kind of look like a skinny Hugh Jackman, right? If I don't have the glasses on, people say skinny Hugh Jackman a little bit. Or a friend of mine told me not too long ago that I look like Harry Potter if he was just an accountant.
Without the
magic, just, right. You know, the nerdiness. And then my brother, though, he kind of looks like Dave Grohl, if you know Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, or a hipster Jesus in some way. So he's got long hair, beard, et cetera, right? So we look very different. Our personalities are very different as well. But that, like, that's, we asked her, like, why didn't you think that we're brothers? And she says, your humor is so different.
No, it's interesting.
Right? It's like you have introverts and extroverts, just as you have morning people and night people. It's just as you have people who love beets and people like me who can't possibly understand why people like to eat dirt. Or things that taste like dirt, right? We all have these different styles and skill sets. And that's what we've learned. That's what our research over the past few years has shown us, that there's actually 7 different ways people tend to express their humor in the workplace. And so it's not a question of, are you funny? It's a question of, what kind of funny are you? And so for the people that we typically think of that are like, oh, you're not funny, maybe don't try to tell any jokes. Like, yeah, maybe you can learn storytelling, but maybe you're not there yet. But there's 6 other personas that you could start with, that you could unlock and already start to bring in some of the benefits of humor?
So this question, believe it or not. So is this something that you, that humor at work does, that you actually work with individuals or teams, but what individuals at helping them improve their humor skills, their individual skills? You really?
Yeah, they're individual. With the larger goal, everything that we do, whether it's, you know, a big chunk of what we do is keynote presentations for organizations, introducing the concept of humor and how it's valuable. We do a lot of workshops with teams and do it in a group dynamic of how do we raise the overall amount of humor on a team level. And then, we work with individuals, executives or salespeople or people that are like, no, I believe in this, what I want to get a little bit better. Because everyone's a little bit different and they start in a little bit of a different place. But the whole goal is to say, how do you start to do this effectively? Because what we call them is there's seven different humor personas, but we very intentionally call them personas as opposed to, say, personalities. Because no matter what your skill set is, you can learn each of the other personas. You have one that you're probably naturally inclined to,
but
you can learn the skill set of all of the others. And so what we encourage people to do is start with the things that are most natural to you, figure out how you can then transform that or leverage that to be more effective in the workplace. And then over time, start to build the other persona. But the seven personas are the enthusiast, the curator, the inventor, the entertainer, the engineer, the advocate, and the skeptic. So super high level for each one of those. The enthusiast is basically people who really just find joy and positivity in everyday life. They're the people that are very quick to laugh, right? Like my mom is someone who is an enthusiast where she's like, she's been kicked out of multiple plays before because sometimes she's like found something so funny and then it's hard for her to get stopped laughing. And then she interrupts the play because there's like, okay, can you step outside until you can control yourself? Yeah. So that's an enthusiast, right? And so an enthusiast, as simple as that is, people like finding joy and humor in everyday life, you can use that and leverage that in the workplace. And you're like, okay, well, how does being an enthusiast help me? Well, first of all, if you're a salesperson or if you interact a lot with clients, say you work in customer service, being a positive person that's constantly smiling or making other people feel good because you're laughing or smiling with them, that's already a great way of building rapport. Or let's say you want to manage stress. An enthusiast is someone who's like, hey, I'm feeling a little bit stressed out, so I'm going to go on YouTube and watch a couple of stand-up comedy clips. I'm now laughing and now I'm relieving some of that stress that I had. And oh, now by the time I get home, I'm actually a little bit more present for my family because I'm there, right? So even something, so anyone can be like, okay, I don't have to create humor. I don't have to do anything with it. All I have to do is bring more humor into my life. There's already positive benefits to doing so. So that's the first one, is the enthusiast. The second one is a curator. And the curator is someone who's kind of like the enthusiast. They find funny things out there, but then instead of just laughing about it and moving on, they think, ah, so-and-so on my team might also really like this. Or, oh, my brother would love this meme that I just saw. Or, oh, this video is so funny, I got to send it to a bunch of my friends. This is one that a lot of people do naturally in their day-to-day life, where it's like, yeah, you find something funny, you share it with other people.
Right.
That's actually really valuable in the workplace. It can be a great way to connect with people. And so as simple as it is and as funny as it might be for us to kind of there's stereotypes about people who put quotations in the bottom of their email signature. That's a simple way to add a little bit of humor. Imagine if that was rotating and periodically was just a humorous line. For a number of people, they're going to ignore that completely. But for a number of other people, it's going to be like, hey, I really appreciate that you have these quotes here. Or I'm more likely to read your email because I'm going to see what quote you decided to put in here, what joke you referenced, et cetera. You don't have to be the funny person. You're now just leveraging the funny of other people and sharing it. And that can create like a nice break, right? And for the people who are like, I want to be serious, it's like, okay, ignore, then don't look at the cartoon.
Right.
If you're so upset about it, don't look at it. It's not costing your screen any more pixels to like display it. There's zero cost to you just kind of ignoring it. But then that, what I would say is to that added connection is you can take, hey, I'm going to add this cartoon just for fun, or can I find a cartoon that's actually relevant to the subject matter to what we talked about?
Absolutely.
And cartoons are really interesting because for a long time, I worked with a gentleman named Pablo Suarez, who's a fantastic researcher, did a lot of work with the Red Cross. And he always wanted to try to find ways to incorporate humor into the work that he was doing. And when I asked him why, because he talks about pretty serious stuff, he said that when what you are communicating is important, then boredom has very serious consequences. Right. And his context was like, for example, one of the things that we worked together on was improving and adding humor to presentations on disaster preparedness. So like if he's going to give a presentation for people what to do in case there's a flood or a tornado or whatever, et cetera, when they're going out and doing that in the community, he's like, if I'm so boring that while I'm talking about what to do in the case of a flood, that you're zoned out or you're on your phone or you don't even show up or you leave halfway through or whatever. If there is an actual flood later and you haven't taken in the information that I shared,
you're SOL.
Yes, very serious consequences, right? And so we need humor to capture people's attention. And that's some of the work that we did. But specifically speaking to cartoons, is he would use that a lot in his research. So for example, when the ICPD came out with their really long list of climate change proposals and the impact and all that kind of stuff, it was a massive document, really hard to get through. His team made a summary version of it, and they included cartoons periodically to keep people engaged a little bit more. And the cartoons were both funny, but also relevant to the subject matter. Like they would find some type of connection to be like, okay, this kind of point is about communicating more effectively. So we found a cartoon that's about communicating more effectively in a fun way.
Yeah.
And so you can connect those dots. So it's not just, hey, not only is this a fun break, but it's actually helping me to understand the material a little bit better. And all of those things, he wasn't the cartoonist, right? All of that is an act of curation,
right?
So that's that second persona. You see it a lot with like the chalkboard signs outside of coffee shops. It's like some of those are original. Some of those are just like they Googled other funny things to find out online and they put it out there. And like, is it harming anyone that, you know, a coffee shop in Seattle has the exact same sign as a coffee shop in you know, North Carolina? No, like it's just a little bit of humor to pass that day.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the curator. If, however, you do want to create original humor, you can do that. That's the inventor. That's the next persona that we typically talk about. And these are people who understand the science of comedy, right? Because there's an art and science to it. And so you can learn certain things like structure, like the basic structure of a joke is set up in punchline. So the setup is creating some type of expectation in the listener's brain. And then you put the punchline at the end that breaks that expectation. And so I like to share the example. There's a great, I think it's George Burns who said that happiness is having a caring, close-knit family in another city. Right? A great joke.
Everything George Burns said.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything he said was very funny. So that's clearly an inventor, but the punchline is at the end. And so if you're an inventor or if you want to be more of an inventor, you start to learn these things like structures. Because if the George Burns quote was happiness is having a family in another city who is caring and close knit, I would never be quoting it because I never would have heard the joke in the first place because it's not very good. Right. And so the inventor understands these nuances of how do I create structure? How do I, you know, how do I whittle a 15 word sentence down to 10 words because that's going to make it funnier, more interesting, or what's the right word, et cetera. So that is a skill that you can learn. It's one of the harder ones, one of the harder personas to learn well. Sure. But if you're in copywriting, if you write a lot of emails, if you write a lot of like, if you do marketing, et cetera, it can be a very valuable skill to learn. They create humor. And then the other ones who create humor are the entertainers. And the entertainers are the ones who we think of as the quote unquote funny people. The people like Robin Williams or other storytellers where you're just like, doesn't matter what that person says, my brother, right? They're just funny. And there's certain techniques that they're doing, whether they realize it or not, that other people can start to learn just in terms of pausing and pacing and tone and how you tell a story. And, you know, presentation skills and things like that. So you can learn that, but it does. Some people are more natural at it. Other people are not. Well, and that's what's interesting about humor, especially in the context of the workplace, is, you know, one of the fears that people have is, you know, what if I say something that's not funny? And if you're a comedian and you say a lot of things that are not funny, then you eventually don't have a career. But the reason why comedians do open mics or small shows, even the best of the best, is they're learning what works and doesn't work. Now, the nice thing is that in the workplace, you don't necessarily have that context. The bar for what is comedic is so low in the workplace that, like, if you say a joke that's not all that funny, as long as it's positive, as long as it's kind of inclusive, it's not aggressive, then it goes from being a joke to just now a regular statement, right? It's not any more boring than any of the other stuff that you're probably talking about in the workplace. There might be a handful of people that, like, were you trying to be fun? Like, but no, if you just move on past it, right? As long as you don't dwell on it, as long as you're not like, come on, eh? That was funny, right? Eh? Come on.
You see why? Here, let me tell you why that was funny.
You all need to lighten up a little. It's like, no, you just move past it and other people will move past it as well. And there's actually research around this as well. Some research that they did at Wharton, and they found that they basically looked at two factors within using humor. Was it appropriate and was it effective, right? So that gives you kind of four scenarios, right? Was the humor, we'll say it appropriate in terms of like what the subject matter was, and was it successful did it make people laugh or smile? And then they did research about all of those combinations. And what they found is that if best case scenario, it was seen as appropriate humor and successful humor, the speaker was seen as both more confident and more competent in the work that they did, right? That's the best case scenario. That's what you would hope. That's what you assume, right? Now, if the humor was appropriate but was unsuccessful, then the speaker, there is no impact on competence. Like, it wasn't any higher in it, but it also wasn't any lower, but their confidence was still seen as higher, right? So you still got a little bit of a boost to say like, oh, okay, this person is somewhat more confident. If the humor was inappropriate, but successful, you weren't seen as any more competent, but you were seen as more confident, similar to the other model. And if the humor was inappropriate and unsuccessful, that's when you had a negative hit to your confidence.
That's when you were out the door.
Right? That's when you were like, this person has no idea what they're doing. So what that means, though, is that if your humor is appropriate, then worst case scenario is people see you as a little bit more confident, and that's it. But if it is also successful, best case scenario, then you're also seen as more competent as well. Right. And so that's where it goes to back to like, one, we can be willing to try, but two, we just got to make sure that the humor is appropriate in the context of work.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. That actually, there's a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of studies, and there's still three more personas to go through.
I know. I was going to say, was this what were they again?
Very quickly. So then you have now we start to get into the application of humor. So the humor engineer is someone who uses humor specifically to solve problems. So this is kind of what I do, the idea of like, what are the challenges you're having? Because that's what we do when we work with organization. It's not just like, here, have humor and take it. It's more of, what are the challenges? What are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? Here's the specific type of humor that's going to help you get there. So that's what an engineer does, is use it as a very specific tool. Then we have the advocate. The advocate is someone who creates a spotlight for other people to share. So maybe you're the manager of a team and you're not particularly funny, but you know that someone on your team is an inventor. So that's like, oh, hey, can you help me write this email or this, you know, press release that needs to go out? Or this other person is a natural entertainer. It's like, oh, hey, can you be the MC for our next, you know, internal offsite or whatever, right? So it's creating the space for other people to shine, or creating the space for humor to be had. So maybe you're like, okay, I have a team meeting every single week, and we're going to spend the last 5 minutes of every single meeting to do some type of thing to bring a little bit of levity into our work. We're going to answer a simple question like, what's the story of your name is a favorite kind of like get to know you type question, or what's a boring fact about yourself?
And that's, I've done a lot of that. Actually, I worked in tech for a little while, and quite specifically, it was about doing that. And, but that falls under your umbrella of humor at work.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's creating these conversations, it's creating moments for human connection. And it's like, if you're the one creating it, then you're the advocate. You're creating the space for it to be happening, where you don't have to necessarily say something funny, but good chances are that if you ask a group of five people, hey, we're going to go around the room and just share the story of your name, through the process of that, you're probably going to laugh a couple of times because they might share something interesting or funny. You're probably going to smile. You're definitely going to feel more connected to your fellow people. You're probably going to be more likely to remember their names if you didn't already know their names, et cetera. Like, it's creating that moment. So it's not necessarily stand-up comedy level hilarious, right? But it's that broader definition of humor, of making things a little bit more effective, making things a little bit more human. And that's what, in effect, an advocate does very well. And then the last persona is a skeptic. And the skeptic is basically someone who is aware of the dangers of humor. And when we first kind of were working on this research, it was kind of our catch-all. Like, if you don't agree with any of this, then you're silly and you're a skeptic. We're going to cover your bases there. But we realize it is actually incredibly valuable because a skeptic is someone who can recognize, hey, not all humor is created equal, and not all humor is going to be received the same way by this, by different people. And so skeptic is kind of like the recognizing of like, ah, I don't know that that was actually an appropriate use of humor in that particular context, or that was somewhat aggressive, or that was inappropriate based on kind of these reasons, et cetera. And so they can be helpful in terms of creating a safe space.
Have you bumped into sort of humor foibles? Like, you know, when you've gone in to work with a group or a team or whatever, where not because of you all coming in, but that there's joking in an inappropriate or ineffective way?
Oh, for sure. A lot of times it comes from the use of inappropriate humor in a couple of different ways. The way that we frame it and what the research kind of shows is that humor is typically inappropriate for one of three reasons. It comes either has an inappropriate target. So some humor, some more aggressive forms of humor, there's some type of target, someone or something that we're poking fun at in the joke that we are making. And so in the workplace, it could be an inappropriate target. So we see this a lot with managers who are maybe more recently promoted as managers or who have been around for a really long time, where they have a more aggressive style of humor. And what they don't recognize is that their status as a leader or their status as a manager takes what they think is just a playful barb at someone else, as now it becomes very aggressive.
Right.
Because now it's coming from this high status position. And it's like, who are you? Like, not only do you control whether or not when I get to go on vacation, which seems weird, but also now you're saying that I look funny or whatever.
Right. Yeah. You're making fun of me and making
me. Now it feels more like bullying. And so, and as a leader, you might, no, it's just a joke. It's a way that I joke with my friends. Well, part of the skill of humor is knowing where the line is and what's appropriate and not appropriate in different contexts. And so, inappropriate target is one that we see a lot, particularly more with leaders. The second reason why humor is inappropriate, it tends to come from an inappropriate topic. So that's where it's like, just because you're going to say something as a joke or something humorous, it doesn't give you an excuse to then talk about things you would not talk about other ways, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, is kind of things that we joke about. That also then does, you know, we see that sometimes where it's kind of like, oh no, that's the pushback that a lot of people give now of kind of like, you can't joke about anything these days. Like, people are too sensitive. And yes, there is, some people are a little overly sensitive sometimes when it comes to humor, but there's also, I think, a lot of people are recognizing and realizing that the types of jokes that we made in the past about someone's gender or someone's upbringing or someone, whatever, were probably never appropriate to begin with. We're just now actually, you know, pushing back against them. So that's the inappropriate topic. So we see that, or topic. So that one we see a little bit more. And then you can also have humor at an inappropriate time. And this is the hardest one to know, because humor can be really effective at diffusing tension and lightening the mood and relieving the stress from people. But there's a fine line between doing that well and saying a joke at the wrong time that's, you know, going to offend someone even worse. That one we see a little bit less of, but it definitely happens.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the one that when the mortuary wants you to come in and create more humor, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. So part of it becomes a little bit learning, okay, what's appropriate, what's not. And in general, what we teach people or what we recommend for people is to start the most positive, start the most broad, always start very kind of light and very positive. And no, is it going to be as funny as what you see in a comedy special on TV or when you go to a comedy club? No. but it's the workplace that's not the goal. And then as you get to know people a little bit better, as your sense of humor on, say, the team evolves, then you can start to use other different types of humor. Because to be perfectly honest, we've worked a lot with emergency first responders. So police officers, EMTs, nurses, doctors, people in very high stress positions. And they, a lot of them tend to have very dark humor, gallows humor. Right. Right. In a sense, but it's a form of catharsis.
Sure.
And it's a type of humor that when they're with together with their group, it helps them to bond together and get over these very difficult moments. But if external people were to see it or overhear it, they would be right. incredibly offended, because like, how can you joke about such? And it's like, well, they joke about it because they have to for their own sanity or whatever.
It's understanding
the different dynamics and different groups, et cetera. Right. And so that's why there's no hard, fast rule for some of these things. But just as you could offend someone by writing the wrong email, it's not like we're like, well, let's get rid of email completely. It's like, no, you have to learn how to use email effectively, right? Same thing is true with humor. Just because humor has the possibility to offend people doesn't mean that we get rid of it completely. It means you just have to learn how to use it effectively.
So I'm looking at time and wanting to be respectful of. So is there something that you would... Is there something we haven't said yet, you haven't spoken about, that you think is really important that people ought to know about this? I think it's fabulous that there's willingness to come in and work with. It's not just a presentation; it's a problem solving enterprise, which is great.
Yeah, that's the goal of ours. Like, I would say that I got fortunate with discovering humor. Because I was not someone, when I started doing improv and stand-up, it was not because I thought, you know who's funny? Me.
Me.
Right? Yeah. You know who should listen to me? Complete strangers. Like, that was not my mentality at all. No, I got pushed into improv and stand-up. I was going to university, getting my degree in computer science and engineering. My best friend wanted to start an improv comedy group. He needed people and forced me to join. And there's a certain,
I've heard that story. I've heard you say that story. And the fact that you, when I was in college, if my best friend had tried to get me to go, it's like, not a chance in hell. Not a chance. No way. So there was something that
there was. There was something. There was. I'll admit, there was a little bit of something, because I was also like, I was raised by an incredible mother who was always like, you can do anything that you want, anything that you put your mind to, etc. So I had an unhealthy level amount of confidence in certain things. Like, I still couldn't talk to a stranger at a party. Like, I was still terrible at that. But I was always good at school. I was always very self confident in things like math and things like that. Yeah. And so when it was presented, and then the other thing is that it was my best friend that wanted to start the group, but the people that he brought in were basically all of my friends that we were hanging out with. And so it's like, if I wanted to continue hanging out with them, you know, multiple times a week, I needed to join this group.
Clever
and part of me was like, maybe. So there was a little bit, but I still needed that gentle push. I still needed that, like, okay, let me try. And I was terrible to start. I was awful. And I got very fortunate because we started in improv where they were really funny. And then I could just be on stage while they were being really funny. And every now and then I might accidentally say something that also got people to laugh.
Yeah, right.
And then we started doing stand-up and other things. But because I needed that gentle push, I feel very fortunate. And my passion for what I do comes from this idea of, I want to be that gentle push for other people. I want to be that push for other people who are listening right now that have a small inkling of, like, even if they're like been told that they're not funny or don't think that they could ever do stand up or whatever, but have the inkling of like, yeah, I kind of want to, I would like to enjoy my work a little bit more. Or, oh, I think I could try. I could be the enthusiast. I'm probably already a curator. Like, anyone that has a little bit of that inkling, I want to be that gentle push to share, because it completely changes the way that you approach work, completely changes how people interact with you. And that would be my last thing that I'd want to share with people is that it comes from a place of intention, but the reality is that you choose how you do your work. Every single day, you're making choices in terms of how you're going to do your work, whether you're going to choose to find ways to make it more fun or less fun, right? Whether you're going to choose the fun or not fun thing, you're going to choose, hey, I have to do a task, like put something up on my back wall. Can I do something fun? That's like, oh, now it's the artwork of my daughter. Hey, I have to send this email. Can I add a little PS at the bottom? That's a simple, silly joke. Hey, I have to do this meeting. Can I close that meeting with a simple question that people get to know each other a little bit better? Hey, I have to send this board thing. Hey, can I add a cartoon to it? Like, you choose every single day in these small moments. So why not choose to be more productive, less stressed, happier? Why not choose to get better results, have more fun? Why not choose to find ways to incorporate humor that works?
Well, that's fabulous. I think that's fabulous. So, and thank you. Thank you so much for being willing to come and spend some time talking about that. And I think it's super important. And well, and especially these days, right? You know, with so many people are stressing about all sorts of things, some of which we are all aware of more and more every day.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.